The Benefits and Limits of International Migration. One solution for desperate regions is outmigration. The solution for China's poor interior is clearly a combination of outmigration and investment and remittances in. When a country has both geographically stressed regions and geographically favored regions, outmigration from the difficult regions is both inevitable and salutary. The Chinese migrate from west to east. Brazilians have long migrated from the arid northeast to the temperate southeast. Italians moved from the subtropical south to the temperate north. But things become much trickier when an entire country is geographically stressed. Outmigration in that case must cross national boundaries. In some regions, such as within Southeast Asia, the Middle East, and parts of Africa, large-scale migration among poor countries is already pervasive, sometimes with little monitoring or control. The landlocked countries typically export a significant part of their labor force to their coastal and richer neighbors. This can be a peaceful affair, but it can also erupt into ethnic violence and even war, as was the case in Côte d'Ivoire, where tensions were deeply exacerbated in the 1990s by the massive influx of workers from Burkina Faso at a time of economic crisis in the receiving country. Eventually, the rising tensions contributed to civil war in 2002. A more deeply contentious route is migration from the poor countries to the rich countries, such as from Latin America into the United States or from Africa into Europe. Immigration is certainly a hot-button issue. Developed countries are happy to accept highly skilled migrants, doctors, nurses, computer engineers, from anywhere at any time, and indeed they compete aggressively for them, attracting the few doctors and nurses from the poorest countries. The developed countries, meanwhile, are deeply conflicted internally about absorbing large numbers of low-skilled workers. The economics of such in-migration are more favorable than the politics. In economic terms, such in-migration of low-skilled workers tends to be a win for the source country, the host country, and the migrant. A low-skilled immigrant arriving in a rich country experiences an immediate jump in income that can be a factor of 10 or more. The migrant's employment tends to be in areas that are largely complementary with the host country labor force, for example, in low-cost, labor-intensive services. Personal services, delivery boys, bus boys, childcare, that offer significant benefits for the host population. And part of the income earned is sent home as remittances, leading to a significant rise of consumption expenditures among family members left behind in the villages. While the low-skilled migrant might compete with low-skilled host country workers and lower their wages as a result, that effect tends to be small. Migrants are, in the economics jargon, mainly complements rather than substitutes for the host country workforce. At the political and sociological level, however, the issues are decidedly more complicated. Low-skilled migrants very often do not assimilate with the local population, or are not allowed to do so, as they are relentlessly separated by economic class, legal status, residential neighborhoods, language, religion, and culture. Legal and illegal migrants arrive without families, leaving behind wives and children who suffer the pangs of separation. The migrants are inevitably in legal flux, without property rights, and highly fearful of judicial processes, especially forced deportation. They may lack access to basic health services. Children, when they are present, may have only a tenuous connection with the schools and public health systems. Separation, discrimination, and mutual fear can be flashpoints of violence, as has been the case repeatedly in the United States and Europe for years. Nor can migration and remittances alone solve the development problems back home. The developing world will add another 1 to 3 billion people by 2050, compared with a total population in today's developed world of around 1 billion. Only a small fraction of the unskilled workers in the poor countries will be allowed to migrate legally to the developed world, and only another modest fraction will make their way illegally. While the benefits of increased remittance incomes for source country economic development can be real, the remittance income will not finance the public investment needs, nor more than a small part of the private investments of the developing countries. We should understand, therefore, that the imperatives for homegrown economic development in the poorer regions must continue to have center stage, with or without migration. This book is continued on Disc 8.